Karl Marx famously wrote that history repeats itself, first as tragedy, then as farce. He wrote that when describing the French Emperor Napoleon III, who had recently come to power in France. Napoleon III was viewed to be a buffoon and a total joke compared to the real Napoleon. In fact, inside France, he was even compared to the Haitian ruler Seleuc. To once again quote Karl Marx, Napoleon III had the same grotesque dignity and high dignitaries as Seleuc. As what was going on in France, Haiti was having its own repeat of history. As Napoleon III was to the real Napoleon, Faustin Seleuc was to the great black despots like Toussaint, Dessalines, and Christophe. And in this episode, we will see how. Before we get into that, though, two quick corrections from last episode. When I referred to the paramilitary gangs that Similian had put together, I called them the Xinglings. Turns out, there was no G at the end of that. It was actually the Xinglins. I have no idea how that went over my head. As for one of their first victims, Seligny Ardouin, I mistakenly said that he had died of the wounds they had given him at the beginning of the April 16th massacre. This was wrong. He was injured in his confrontation with Seleuc, but rather than dying, he survived and was thrown in prison. There he sat for a year before being executed, alongside many other of Seleuc's political enemies. Seleuc was very bloodthirsty when it came to his political enemies. His rule is sometimes described as a reign of terror because of the atmosphere of political violence he employed. He had public accusations and executions of his enemies, which served to scare the population into obedience. I ended last episode with the massacre of the colored elites, like Seligny Ardouin, in the capital. Although the violence in Port-au-Prince itself had only lasted 3 days, following it, a wave of violence hit the South Province. There, a violent resurgency of a Cousse-Piquette uprising rocked the region. New bands and armies of angry peasants formed in the old tradition of a coup. But their goals had changed. These new bands of peasant warriors were somewhere between bandit gangs and terrorist paramilitary forces. In Lacaille, Piquette stormed the city, pillaged and killed colored elites. In the district of Acaigne, a Piquette army defeated a force created to fight them and executed 200 prisoners. In Jacmel, a Piquette army formed to try to pillage the city, but they were defeated. This pattern of violence against the colored elite spread through the South. The rural masses systemically committed acts of violence against the colored elites. In an effort to break the economic domination of the elites, to quote one historian, terror was revolution. They demanded many things, such as the repudiation of the French indemnity, but their main demand was land. They wanted the breaking up and redistribution of the land owned by the elites. They were agrarian peasants, after all. Just 3 days after the end of the massacres in Port-au-Prince, Seleuc went on a tour of the South. On this tour, Seleuc observed and made himself the leader of the Piquettes, although he did try to curb their violence a bit. He still got credit for the political violence against the elites, though, and he was endorsed by the Piquettes. Like their urban counterparts, the Xinglins, the rural Piquettes viewed Seleuc as their ultimate leader. But Seleuc was no Piquette. He was actually far more moderate than most of the people who looked to him as their idol. He feared popular revolution and feared the masses gaining control of power. He thought of the Piquettes more as a tool he could use to gain power than as a partner he would share power with. He harnessed the popular energy to gain control of the country, but did so mostly with charisma. He had shown himself to be an enemy of the elites, elites hated by the Piquettes and Xinglins. That said, he was far more of a popular president than most of his predecessors, and he was very, very popular among the Piquettes and Xinglins. With the Piquette movement, Seleuc kind of folded it into his control, rather than directly submitting to it or violently crushing it. Piquet leaders were given official army commands, while Piquet soldiers were made into National Guardsmen. But Seleuc never agreed to the Piquet demands for land redistribution, and he never really did the social revolution that the Piquets wanted him to. And then with the elites, like Toussaint, Seleuc brought those who he hadn't killed back into the fold. But the Piquets didn't care, and those who did kept silent out of fear. He had, after all, just established his bloody dominance over Haiti. So why was Seleuc so successful? What did he do that made his reign last so much longer than the last four presidents? What he did was he harnessed the will of the people. He had either allowed or masterminded a wave of political violence against the elites to sweep the South and West departments in his name, making him the champion of his allies and the overlord of his enemies. Through his use of violence, violence which had not been used since Christophe, he established his power. With his domination over the colored elite secured, Seleuc could now secure his left flank. With the rise of the radical Piquets and Zinglins, some of the leaders who had risen to prominence in the massacres had their own ambitions, ambitions of presidential power. They now posed a new challenge to Seleuc. This group includes one of the main leaders of the Piquets, whose name I won't trouble you with. This guy had begun robbing travelers, especially foreigners. When foreign consuls complained about this to Seleuc, Seleuc had him arrested. Then, a plot was uncovered inside the ranks of the Piquets to launch a revolt and create their own kingdom in the south, where a genocide would be carried out against the coloreds, of which this guy was the leader. So he had him and a few other leaders shot. Once again, the only Piquets who cared about this were those who were intimidated. Another leader that Seleuc decided was too much of a challenge was someone I have already introduced, Semelin, the commander of the Zinglins and the man most responsible for the April Massacre. After the April Massacre, the remaining colored elite had submitted to the leaders that had just massacred their brethren. They praised Semelin, Seleuc, and others. They now saw Seleuc as a moderate protector for them against the rural masses. Semelin took their praise at face value, and as more and more of it accumulated, he began to believe that he had major support from both the right and the left. He then began dreaming of becoming president. None of this makes sense unless you know how much this guy drank. As this happened, Seleuc seems to have lost trust in Semelin and slowly removed him from power. Then, after an incident, two of his colleagues denounced him to Seleuc. After this, he began conspiring for real, for a coup. Because he was a drunk, everyone found out, and so he was fired from his position in the presidential guard and put under house arrest. On April 16, 1849, 1 year after he had launched his massacre, a group of soldiers appeared by his house. He thought they were here to launch a revolt to make him president, so he rushed out to greet them. Instead, they beat him and threw him in prison. He was sentenced to life imprisonment, and so we kind of lose track of him after that. He may have been killed, or he may have just died in prison. Like Louverture had with Moïse, Seleuc had just removed a potential challenge from power. But the effect was the same as the Piquet leader. Seleuc had just removed a challenger from the left with no reaction from any of the Zinglins or anyone else on the left. These events of urban and rural attempted revolution kind of mirror what was happening in Europe around this time. There, the revolutions of 1848 had unleashed a flood of political action, but it had ultimately culminated in defeat. In Haiti, the massacres of the spring and summer of 1848 appeared as though they would be a turning point, when the common people would break the rule of the elites over Haiti. But it had failed. Salouk had taken advantage of popular forces to secure his control over power, but he had prevented the real societal social revolution that the Biquettes had wanted. This wasn't the end of the domination held by colored elites over Haiti. It would turn out to just be a brief intermission. With his authority clearly established over Haiti, Salouk could turn his attention towards other matters, specifically the East. Salouk initially thought that it was best to leave the East alone, but he was convinced to invade it by some of his close advisors, including Similian. He believed it would be easy, and even went so far as to believe that the Dominicans wanted him to invade. It had now been half a decade since the invasion of the East by Richer, and it appears that Haitian leaders had not learned their lesson yet. In spring 1849, Salouk attempted what would turn out to be the first of three attempted invasions of the East. Like previous invasions, Salouk marshaled an army thousands strong and far greater than whatever the Dominicans could summon. He invaded the East and marched pretty far into it. He followed a similar route to Richer, marching along the south, where he was able to defeat the Dominican challengers. But then he was outsmarted by the Dominicans, who managed to cut off his access to water and forced him to fall back a bit. He was then defeated and routed in the subsequent battle, and then was bombarded by the small Dominican navy. On both sides, no prisoners were taken. With these defeats, along with a lack of supplies and rumors of a conspiracy in Port-au-Prince, Salouk decided to return to Haiti. But he was very angry about his defeat, and so, like Dessalines, as he marched back, he unleashed his anger on the local population. He was almost comically brutal in this regard, executing families, personally setting a city on fire, blinding people, and even killing animals. Once he returned to Port-au-Prince, he pretended it had been a success, and convinced the population to do the same. This would, however, not be the last time he would attempt an invasion of the DR, as we will see next episode. In addition to his dream of reunification, Salouk also had ambitions to become more than just a mere Republican president. In the tradition of Dessalines, Salouk wanted to make himself an emperor, and he had the power to do so. In August 1849, a petition for him to become emperor was circulated around Port-au-Prince. No one dared to refuse to sign it. This petition was then presented to the House of Representatives, which was still kicking around, and then to the Senate, both of whom obviously ratified it. He was proclaimed emperor on August 26th. At the palace, he was crowned with a hastily made crown, and then he went to the church, and finally toward the city, where the population had set up decorations. However, according to Gustave Dehelot in his book, Salouk and His Empire, which is where I get most of the details for a lot of this episode, Salouk would stare at engravings of Napoleon Bonaparte's coronation and desire to be just like him. So, as we will see next episode, Salouk is going to have a grand coronation ceremony, but like 3 years later. With the creation of the new Haitian Empire came new changes. For one, there was a new constitution, which I won't even trouble explaining, because it's just a scrap of paper. The House and Senate did still remain, though. In addition, following in the example of Christophe, Salouk created a nobility for himself. But unlike Christophe, who had given land to nobles, Salouk created empty titles, which he just gave to people with civil and military power already. This means that, for example, many Piquet leaders became dukes or barons. In all of these actions, Seleuc returned to the traditions of Toussaint, Dessalines, and Christophe. The violent massacre of the Coloureds is pretty similar to the massacre of the French by Dessalines. All his arrests and sort of reign of terror apparatus is similar to that of Christophe. In fact, political repressive violence like this hadn't really happened this way since Christophe. He was an emperor like Dessalines, with a nobility like Christophe. And of course, the repression of the Piquets and his prevention of social revolution is similar to all three of those rulers. Toussaint had even had his own adopted nephew killed because he was a threat to power. But Seleuc is kind of a joke version of these guys. While Toussaint and Dessalines are taken seriously by historians, Seleuc and Christophe are kind of mocked. He is said to be a violent idiot tyrant who used senseless violence to stay in power, and who seriously hurt Haiti in ways which I will go into more next episode. Which, I mean, that's not wrong. One of the main sources I have, Seleuc and His Empire, details many small anecdotes that make you think about how stupid this guy is. And he was a tyrant. He was a monster towards his people, although he takes more heat for it than Dessalines or Louverture. But above all, Seleuc was a new black leader. He represented the will of the people, and he was returned to the domination of the blacks over Haitian politics.